and welcome to Ready for the Right Guy 5. You're here at the beginning of this brand new year, and we're so excited to have you here with us. We want to welcome you, and I also want to welcome with us today our wonderful special guests, and that is Joe Dunn and Molly Apple. Welcome to both of you. So happy to have you here.
Hi, Michelle. Nice to see you.
Hello.
And I really love featuring these two. I've had them on events before because I just think they're a really great example of that soulmate connection and love. And I really like their energy together. And I think you're going to really enjoy them. So before we jump in to what I know is going to be a really great topic on fear of commitment and what to do about it, I just want to introduce Molly and Joe. So Molly and Joe are co-authors of The Soulmate Experience, A Practical Guide to Creating Extraordinary Relationships, and The Soulmate Lover, A Guide to Passionate and Lasting Love, Sex, and Intimacy. Joe and Molly coach singles and couples on creating and sustaining relationships that are deeply loving, intensely passionate, and profoundly connected. That sounds real good.
It is.
And that's what I think so many of the people on the event here are looking for. So we're excited to hear your wisdom on this. And you guys also have a new book coming out soon, right?
We do. That should be later this year.
Mm-hmm. Okay, awesome.
So we're going to talk today a little bit about something that it's just come up as a really important piece of this, and that's what we're wanting to share today.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so before we jump into our main topic, which I'm so glad you're talking about, this idea of fear of commitment and what to do about it, I think it would be wonderful if you just shared, because some of the people will be new to our audience and new to your work, a little bit about how the two of you came together and created this great synergistic life and relationship and are doing all these cool things together, writing books, inspiring other people in their relationships. Just because I think it gives people hope to kind of hear the stories of how people come together and find each other. Do you mind if we get personal right up front?
Not at all, no. In fact, you know, I think our circumstances of meeting are a little unusual and also go to show that you can meet a great person anywhere. Because we met on a venue that is no longer available for relationships, and that's Craigslist.
Yeah.
What was it, 15, 16 years ago, something like that?
Yeah. And I think, you know, we've both been through long-term relationships, and those had winded down for different reasons. But I think that's an important thing, too, is that, and we coach so many people who meet later in life the love of their lives. Like, that is definitely possible. And I think actually a little bit more possible because you know yourself better. You've learned some relationship skills, hopefully. You're open to learning more to make this thing work. And you know that time is short. Mm-hmm. And I think all of those things were part of why it worked so well for us, that we were really ready to dive into this 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's so important, and I really appreciate that you said that, because, you know, I met and married my husband at age 43. I became a first-time bride at age 43, and I did have some long-term relationships prior to that, but nothing that, you know, worked for the long-term for me. I do think, as I look back on it, I think I didn't really even know myself well enough, like in my 20s and 30s, to really know exactly what it was I was really looking for. Maybe I was a late bloomer, but I don't think that I'm alone. Mm-hmm. And I too tend to work with women, and I work specifically with women, but I tend to work with women who are a little more mature, 40s, 50s, 60s. That's kind of my sweet spot. And it's so wonderful and amazing when people find love a little bit later in life, and there are some advantages. So that's just kind of cool that you brought that forward.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And really, when we're young, we don't generally get much of an education on relationships. And
yeah.
So a lot of times we have to do it this way. We have to go through 20 years of trying to figure it out and having relationships and see what works and what doesn't work.
Yeah, the whole trial and error thing. And hopefully we're learning and growing along the way and taking wisdom and that experience into our lives in a positive way. that helps lead us into something that can be a better fit or a longer lasting or more satisfying relationship.
Yeah, I also think, you know, as we age, we are just hopefully more accepting of other people and their idiosyncrasies and more grateful for whatever we do get to have together. And those two ingredients are magical for a relationship.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So being more accepting and being grateful for what we do get.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Yeah, I do agree with you. I think if you've gone for a long period of your life without having a relationship or the right relationship or right connection, you do appreciate it more. I mean, I know mm-hmm. I appreciate more what I now have with my husband mm-hmm. than I would have if I would have found love and things would have just worked out easily mm-hmm. for me when I was 20 or 25. I've got a couple of nieces and nephews who married people like in their early 20s. And it seems like at this point, you know, everything is just going great. And I sometimes look at that and go, how in the world does that happen? I mean, you know, you don't know the long-term forecast. And of course we hope for the best for them and for their happiness long-term. But it's like, that kind of seems like an anomaly to me based on my own experience.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So thank you for sharing a little bit about that. And I know as we get into the topic, you may share other little bits and pieces of your story or your work together. But why did you choose this topic about fear of commitment and what to do about it?
You know, we've been doing this for a while. Our first book was published in 2011. We've been coaching particularly women for a while. And there is a lot of good advice out there. And you feature lots of it on your summits. And one of the things we've really started to notice a lot of women saying is that, wow, but it seems like there's very few men who are actually interested in a committed relationship. And we've heard a lot of people say, oh, no, that's not true. And when we've been more and more looking into it, it's true.
It is true. Yeah.
It's absolutely true. And from my perspective, if we can figure out why that's true and find a way to work with it,
yeah,
and propose a solution to why are people being afraid of commitment, and propose a solution to that, we'll be a lot more able to create that relationship we want.
Oh, I love that you're going to take this on. This is fascinating. So I want to ask a couple of really quick questions before we go further. Is it from your research and from the work you've been doing around this, is it your opinion that it's real, this fear of commitment? It's real in men. Is it also real in women?
I do see it particularly younger, right? Mm-hmm. You know, people are getting into long-term and marriages, long-term relationships and marriages later in life. That's a definite mm-hmm. fact. And I think there's reasons for that that are positive. For the older set, you know, 40 on up, there's different things going on about where this fear of getting into a long-term relationship is coming from. And I think primarily we see it with men. And I have seen it with women where they're happy with their lives. You know, going through menopause is one of the reasons that women become, oh, I'm not so obsessed with a relationship anymore. I really have all these things in my life I enjoy. So if the right relationship comes along, I'm going to look at it, but I'm not desperately looking for one anymore. But for men, different things are going on. I think a lot more men are not interested in that long-term commitment right now.
At least doing it the way that it's always been done, right?
Okay, so let's explore that a little bit. What do you think are some of the key things going on with men in terms of why they may not be interested in the long-term commitment in the more traditional ways that we're talking mm-hmm. about?
Let me take on the first one, and I'm going to let you handle the second one. The first one is that they've already done that. A lot of men at 40s, 50s, 60s, they've done long-term relationship or relationships. And, you know, typically, right, after 15, 20, 25 years, things wind down. It may have ended unharmoniously. There may have been a lot of negative stuff going on, and they're like, I don't want to do that again. I don't want to.
There are a lot of lousy relationships out there, you know, that have gone on for years and years, where people just stay together because it's convenient, children, or children, or financially it's beneficial. But there's a lot of love lost in those, a lot of those relationships.
Mm-hmm. So when, you know, the kids are grown, I'm finally out of that. I stuck it out. I'm finally out of it. I don't want to go back in. I'm looking around at my friends, and many of them are having similar experiences, relationships that aren't great. And I think that's a huge barrier to wanting to be in a long-term relationship.
Mm-hmm. And some of these men have probably come out of a long-term relationship or marriage and maybe gone through a nasty divorce, and it may have impacted them financially as well.
Good point.
And they're thinking, wow, I don't want to sign up for that whole deal again.
Exactly. Exactly. That's a big group of people. But I think in the last 10, 15 years, we've got another
another challenge.
Another one Joe's going to tell us about now.
Yes.
All right, Joe, take it away, my friend.
Well, I think it's the, you know, upsurge in not only pornography, but also in, you know, there's so many people or articles, magazines talking about all the various opportunities there are sexually out there. You know, I'm sure, I don't look at Cosmopolitan, but I'm sure there's a Cosmo header out there about, you know, three-way sex or multiple partners, or
every month
you can have, you know, all of this, and they're looking at that and going, wow, I want that, but I can't get it in a regular relationship.
Right. It's something that we've actually given a name to. If you've heard of the word FOMO, do you know this word?
Yeah.
Fear of missing out. Mm-hmm. We call this sexual FOMO. And it is an epidemic of people who, you know, they sit at their computer and they're bombarded all day long on social media, on advertisements of look what you can have, look what's out there for you. And we're like, oh my gosh, I don't want to get into a relationship because all these great opportunities won't be there for me. I will be missing out forever on all of these things that are coming down the pipeline of possibilities.
And, you know, realistically, you know, 90% of those possibilities are probably never going to materialize for that person. But the idea that 1% might be viable, I think keeps a lot of people from wanting to say, oh, I'm going to get in this relationship and it'll eventually be in the same old relationship and I'll never have an opportunity to experience any of these other things.
And we have interviewed enough men to know that this is pretty darn common. Mm-hmm. This idea that if I were to commit to a long-term relationship, I would be giving up all of these other mostly sexual possibilities. And that's very alluring, right? Especially for a man who's been, let's say, in a 20-25 year marriage, went through, as you said, an acrimonious divorce, is finally single again, and they're seeing, oh my gosh, there's all these things out there that I could be experimenting with. I don't want a long-term relationship. I just want to date casually.
You know, especially if during that 15 or 20 year marriage, the sex ended early on, or even if it continued on, it was just sort of by rote, you know, it just lost its luster and excitement. And so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think what you're talking about is very real.
It's
so
very real.
Because most of the women that are listening to this are really interested in a committed relationship, they really want a monogamous committed relationship. Mm-hmm. We want to have partnership in their life. What can we do about all of this? This is real, and I believe it is.
It's real.
Yeah.
What do we do? What's the path forward here?
Here's and this is not going to be for everyone, but I think a lot of women could take something from this idea. And we've been coaching women on this. It's kind of a radical path, and it's that we've got to deal with that upfront. We've got to deal with the man's fear that they're not gonna have sexual excitement, sexual fulfillment if they commit to this. And I think what a woman has to do, she's kind of got a superpower, because we have to remember, men fare well in relationship. right? Statistics show they live longer, they're healthier, they like being supported. They like that somebody's there to help take care of them. Of course, they're hopefully doing the same in response, but it's a nice place to be. I mean, what let's talk about this for a second. What do you enjoy about being in a long-term, committed, monogamous relationship?
The one with you? Everything. My past ones, not so much, but...
What do you like about just the part about having a partner and being together on a daily basis?
Well, I mean, you take such good care of me that I'd probably be lost. I'm so spoiled now by how good care you take of me that I'd be lost if you were gone.
Well, and so I'd say the same thing.
You know, I think there's that comfort in having somebody that you know cares so deeply about you and is looking out for you and is there for you and willing to listen to you and support you and help you grow. So. Yeah, that's
so. I think there's definitely we've got to remember that they want this, but the thing that they're afraid of not having is the sexual excitement and fulfillment. So that's a thing that we need to directly address. And our proposal is that you do that by talking about it up front. That I understand that it's hard to be in a committed relationship these days because you see all of these possibilities out here. But what I think is that together, you know, at the beginning of a relationship, hopefully the sexual connection is really strong.
Right? Pretty much takes care of itself, right? Because you've got that lust, that desire, mm-hmm. that excitement. It's yes. new.
Yes. Yeah. And so if we can start having conversations from the early on that I want to help maintain this, I want to find ways that we can maintain this, that it's important to me. It's very important to me in a long-term relationship to have a thriving, exciting sexual connection. And I'm proposing that you have that conversation up front. This is radical, right? We're not used to necessarily talking about sex. That's why, you know, we're going to have a lot of this in our new book about how do you do this? How do you introduce this topic? How do you talk about it? What are a lot of different ways to keep things exciting and propose it in such a way that you quell their fears that they won't have an exciting sexual connection if they commit to you long term?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, in one way, it seems radical. In other ways, it seems like, yeah, I mean, it's like, why wouldn't you want to do that? Because, you know, here's my experience. And I know that, you know, we can't speak in absolutes because people are individuals. But I work with, like I said, mainly women, you know, 40s through their 60s. And so many of these women have expressed how important that sexual connection and intimacy and passion is for them still. Mm-hmm. And we sometimes think of like a postmenopausal woman, maybe the desire has gone down a bit or that sort of thing. And that can be true. Whatever's going on with the hormones can influence those things. But women express to me all the time how important this is to them as well. So maybe in different ways, maybe it's not the sexual FOMO as much as it is for men and the visual things they're seeing. I don't know. But I do think, why wouldn't you want to have that kind of conversation? Because mm-hmm. it seems like it creates an opportunity for a win-win.
Yes.
It really does. Especially when you do it up front when sex is already exciting. Mm-hmm. It's like, hey, this is great. How do we keep this going?
Yeah, I would go into it saying, you know, I'd really love to see you more often and maybe even make this long term. But I have to tell you, what's important to me is having a really strong sexual connection. So I want to make sure, even though it can be vulnerable and scary to talk about these topics, which spoiler alert, that helps keep the sexuality, you know, alive, is that vulnerability, being willing to have those conversations, but that you put it out in front that a sexual connection is really important to me. So I want to make sure that, you know, a full sex life is something you want too.
And I think that's another way where we're sort of turning this whole thing on its head, is that I think a lot of women are I don't know if they're raised or trained or they've learned to hold back, conditioned to wait for the man, right? To come and take them or propose something new or something. And I'm thinking this is, you know, the way to really get a handle on this is for the woman to bring that forward to the man. Like, no, I want to make sure our sex is going to be great. That's unusual for a man to hear, I think, in many cases. And it's also exciting, right? Yeah. And there could be many reasons that a man doesn't come forward, you know, of his own volition and start things, right? And so if a woman can step in, I mean, it doesn't mean he doesn't want to, just to, you know, sometimes it's hard to just get things going. And so if a woman is willing to step up and say, no, this is important to me, I'll take control here tonight, or, you know, when necessary.
Or talking, you know, raising interesting topics, talking about, you know, have you had any fantasies that you might be able to share with me? Those kinds of things. Of course, all of those, everything has to be done with a lot of awareness, which is why, you know, this book that we're working on is taking us 4 years to write, because we've had to try out these ideas with many, many people and get just the right cautions in how you can move forward on these, in these various ways. One of the things I want to say, though, in terms of women are typically, and we're speaking in generalities, but women are typically more creative, and they can harness that ability to be creative in the bedroom. They can harness that and put it to good use in this realm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I say yeah from experience.
Which, you know, brings me to one other thing. And we've talked in the past, and, you know, in our books and in interviews about, and a lot of people talk about how to find the right person.
Yeah.
That's important here too. You need to find somebody who's going to be open to these kinds of conversations, right? Not completely shut down and refusing to talk, because then you've got somebody who's not only open to this, but they've also got that other thing going on of this FOMO piece of, but I don't want to commit, because then I might miss out on this thing over here. So testing the waters with these conversations early on is really important, because you want to find somebody who has a willingness.
Exactly. And especially in the age range that we're talking about, because as you alluded to earlier, there are men and women who reach this age and they're not that interested in sex anymore. Well, if you still are, you better darn well have that conversation early on in the relationship before you get, you know, way down the road and then find out that your partner's not really into it.
So. Yeah, very good point. Very good point. Because you could have two people together that were totally incompatible this way. If someone no longer really had much desire or wasn't that important to them anymore to have an active, satisfying sex life, and the other partner really wants that and that's really important to them, that could really cause major, major problems. I mean, don't they say money and sex are the top two things that tear couples apart? So assessing that compatibility and being willing to have those conversations, it just seems like a win-win. It seems, on one hand, you know, Molly, you said it's kind of radical. And it is kind of radical because so many of us were brought up in ways or culturally trained not to, that these were taboo subjects.
Yes.
So or less, so to speak.
We have a little series on our YouTube channel of these kind of sexy conversation starters, where we ask each other the questions and talk about them just to show how things can be drawn out. When we do it, we don't pre-script it. We just ask the question and then the conversation rolls up from there, and it's pretty fun. But, you know, sometimes you just need some ideas about how to do this and how to start getting comfortable talking to somebody about these kinds of topics. But that conversation is one of the things that can fuel your sexual desire and connection for years.
Yeah, because we talk about sexuality and relationships so much, it's like we have this constant level of foreplay that happens.
It is.
And it's all that does. This goes when we wake up through when we go to bed,
it
right?
Does.
And so for us, it is incredibly easy for us to get sexual, because you don't have to start from a low place and build it up with lots of foreplay. No, the foreplay with us is always up here. And so, you know, it just, you know, in a minute we could be.
It's like a constant level of turn on to have those conversations, to be open to, oh, I heard about this thing. I saw this thing. A friend said this, and be able to share that and gosh, that just...
It's like you keep that sexual energy alive and front and center.
Between us. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I want to ask you, a question that I think might be on some people's minds. So you always hear that the chemistry, you know, and chemistry can be really hot in the beginning, particularly if you're really physically attracted to each other. Mm-hmm. And that's a really fun, exciting experience. But I think so many people are of the opinion or belief that that just kind of fades and dies and bombs out.
I think if you do nothing,
yeah,
it does.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a fire, right? You walk away from that fire in 20 minutes, probably going to be out.
You don't feed it.
Yeah. You got to keep, you know, blowing on it and throwing flammable stuff.
You know, one of the things that we're writing about too in our new book that's coming out is how to intentionally cultivate desire for each other.
Mm.
We do put, I wouldn't say effort, but attention into this, you know, like, I look at him every day and look for the things that attract me. You know, I might come in to the bathroom when he's showering. I open up the shower door and just go, oh yeah. Like it's a constant appreciation. I don't let it go. I don't let it slide.
She does that constantly, by the way.
I do.
it's that swimmer's body you've got there, Joe.
I guess it is, yeah. I can always tell if I'm shaving away from the door and all of a sudden the chill comes, you know. Yeah.
And I think that feeds into him wanting to maintain that swimmer's body, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. It absolutely does. I mean, I'm in better shape now than I was when we met 15, 16 years ago. Because, you know, when you have somebody appreciating you, you want to keep that appreciation coming.
Yeah.
You really do. So it's a motivator.
Yeah. And I think that we can bring that conscious awareness to keeping our desire for each other alive. One of the ways is by talking about it. How do we do this? Instead of just letting things kind of go the way they go. And it's another way to have this open dialogue that's kind of spicy, that kind of keeps things interesting and alive.
Yeah, and the longer you let it go, the harder it is to get it back in mm-hmm. a lot of cases. Mm-hmm. Like anything else, like exercise, right? If you slack off for a month, it's boy, that good. Next time you go back, it's going to be painful. Well, sex is the same.
Those muscles are like spaghetti. Yeah, and I love this idea that you just mentioned of looking for the things that attract you to Joe or that you find attractive or sexy about him. Because I do think that, you know, along with the sexual side of a long-term relationship, things can go stale when we stop, not just sexually, but in other ways, when we stop really seeing that other person or we stop really appreciating each other. Or stop really remembering what attracted to us to begin with. Mm-hmm. We kind of get used to this person being around, and it can almost be like you begin to take each other for granted a little bit.
Yeah.
But I love what you're teaching because I believe it can actually, you're actually teaching ways that the passion, the intimacy, the love, partnership can go even deeper. Mm-hmm. You know, yes, it's that hot chemistry in the beginning, but when you really like know each other, and really know how to please each other and know how to make each other really happy and to really know how to make each other feel loved and appreciated. I mean, that's a whole nother level that goes above and beyond whatever the physical satisfaction might be. It takes it, like, it transcends all of that into so much more, so much bigger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we've managed to keep that excitement in our relationship up consistently now for more than 15 years. So it really does pay off to always be finding something to appreciate about your partner.
Yeah.
Right. And to be for being grateful for them to be in your life.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and that's so important. That's one of the themes that runs through all our work and all our books. You know, there's a little tiny meditation in our first book about cultivating this gratitude and appreciation by remembering this person could, as he says, he could get run over by the beer truck today, right? That could happen. This relationship will end. There is no doubt about it. And I want to stay aware of that actually every day because keeping that at the forefront of my awareness makes me bring that gratitude and appreciation naturally all day long.
Yeah.
So it's not something that I try to not think about or tell myself, oh, I can't think about that because that'll make it happen. No, no, no. What we're doing with this little meditation of realizing that, you know, one or both of us could not be here tomorrow is the intention of this meditation is to raise our gratitude and appreciation for this person being in our lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's really beautiful. And it's sometimes is something we think, well, I don't want to think about the fact that something like that could happen, but it's true. Things can change, and we've all known people or have experienced ourselves where things, something can happen and things can change in like the blink of an eye.
Yeah.
So not taking our partner for granted, not taking our lives for granted or the precious time that we have. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're like at the beginning of a new year here, mm-hmm. and that feels like a new beginning for a lot of people. But recognizing, you know, we don't have unlimited time on this planet. None of us know what's going to happen. So, and I think most people don't look back on their lives and think, man, I wish I'd have spent more time at work. But they might feel like, and I wish I'd have spent more time really loving, really being in partnership or really doing what was most important to me from my heart in the world.
Because it really is the most gratifying thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. Nothing better.
So besides some of the things we're talking about, just to shift gears just a little bit, and I love that you brought up this topic. It's so great. And I've loved our conversation so far. But if you were to reflect back on the last 15 years that the two of you have been together, what are two or three things that you feel like you have learned and that you'd like to maybe share about partnership or about relationships or that sort of thing? Mm-hmm. Because I'm asking this question because I feel like relationships are the biggest learning opportunity that we have in our lives. I just feel like we learn more about ourselves and we learn more from relationships than almost any other thing. Mm-hmm. So I'd be curious to hear from each of you, maybe one or two things that you feel like you'd like to share.
Are you ready? I have mine.
Oh, go ahead.
I think this is something we've talked about all along as well, but it's becoming more and more powerful to me, which is the idea of accepting exactly who he is at any moment. I can't tell you how many times, you know, it started out with things, silly things like, oh, he leaves the cap off the toothpaste, right? And I came up with this way back when, things like that happen, I look at it and say, okay, that cap on the counter is a reminder that I live with this wonderful man, period. That's why the cap is there. And as if I want to put it back on the tube of toothpaste myself, I am reflecting on the fact that it is there as a reminder for me of this wonderful man in my life. And I've been able to use that reminder trick for so many things because honestly, we're very different people. I go around the house with my eye constantly scanning for things that need to be picked up or put away. He goes around the house
looking for places I can put stuff down.
Yeah. He does so many wonderful things for me. It's like, oh, this is a way I give back to the relationship. I pick up this stuff. I'm not a woman who's being walked all over and used. It's not like that at all. It's that for me, it's a very natural, easy thing to pick things up. And it's like, oh, I can contribute in this way. I walk around, pick things up, put them in the hamper, put them away, and it doesn't matter. It's this act of gratitude for being in this relationship that I do these things instead of what could roll out in a typical relationship. I could be constantly on his case about how come you left this out? Why don't you see this? Right?
And every time I'd see you coming, I'd be ducking around, you know, trying to hide out from her. So I didn't get back.
Yeah, in fact, I love that you brought this up. My husband has this habit of leaving the cupboard doors open. So like if you open the kitchen cupboard to get something out, always the cupboard doors are open.
Yes.
So I'm going behind him, you know, shutting all these doors. Yes. But
every time you shut a door, if you could say, oh, I'm thanking him for this, that it's my reminder to practice gratitude for this person being in my life.
Yeah. Yeah, and it no longer, it used to bug me, but it no longer upsets me. I just kind of shut the doors, and I'm like, he's not doing this because he's thoughtless. He's just got other things on his mind. Yeah. And I also believe that men really go for efficiency. So, you know, maybe not that he's consciously thinking this, but he's like, well, I just have to open that cupboard again. Or Joe might have to take the cap off the toothpaste
the next time.
That's right.
Yeah. So this actually not, and I don't want to sidetrack because I want to give Joe a chance to respond to this too. But this actually reminds me also of something that I feel like I've learned, and that's the importance of finding humor in relationships and not, you know, making mountains out of molehills and being careful that you're going to choose those hills you're really willing to die on. Mm-hmm. Like, we could cause all kinds of conflict in our relationships, Molly, if we got so focused on the toothpaste cap or the cupboards not being built. And I can even remember one woman that I read an article, and her husband had passed away, and she was in a state of grief. And she said, you know what? She said, it used to bother me so much when I'd see those socks on the floor.
Yeah,
I felt thoughtless. And she said, I'd give anything to see his socks.
Yeah. Right now. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
So that's a perspective. Anyway, I didn't mean to.
It's a good perspective.
So, Joe, do you want to share anything that you've learned in partnership over the last 15 years that might be valuable to our audience?
Yeah, I think that maybe a little bit of encouragement for, you know, your audience. And that is that, you know, I hear people or have heard people all these years say, well, relationships are so difficult, right? They're so hard to do relationships. And I think what I found is that they're really not that hard. You know, if you do them the traditional way, the way we've all been brought up, and you get mad about the toothpaste cap or the, you know, cabinet door being open. Yeah, they can be extremely challenging. I have been there. I've done that extremely challenging relationship. But on the flip side, that's also possible to have a very easy, loving, funny, we laugh all the time talking about humor and relationship. We're laughing constantly. And it's just, it takes awareness. It takes a little bit of effort, not only on yourself, but on your relationship. But I think what you find is that once you see that, hey, I could do this, it's doable to have this light, easy, fun, connected relationship, then I think the work that it might have taken to get to that point, which doesn't take very long, then I think it's no longer work, because it's like, wow, I'd much rather have this relationship and do what it takes to have this. If that means, you know, not worrying about the toothpaste cap or the cabinet door, wow, that's easy to give up to have this kind of relationship. So I would say that relationships are not that difficult to do as long as you've got a good roadmap for how to do it and you're willing to give up some of the old beliefs that you came into the relationship with.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. A great relationship is very, very possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I do think you're right. I don't think they're necessarily difficult or hard. I do think they're living things, and I do think they require attention and focus, meaning you don't just assume that everything's going to go fine on autopilot without putting attention and effort into creating what it is you want together.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, and I think there's so many different ways we can create win-win scenarios. And I love this concept. And it's something I feel like, you know, I'm always learning more about relationships, but I feel like I'm learning how to really do this in my marriage. And just as an example, for when my husband and I got married, we talked about how so often you have in relationships, it's typically the woman kind of waiting to see if her husband gets the right thing for Valentine's Day or her birthday, or if he's going to forget an anniversary, heaven forbid, or anything like that. And then she's, you know, it's almost like she's got this criteria in her mind of what's supposed to happen, what it's supposed to look like. And if it doesn't happen, then he's going to get the silent treatment, or he's not going to get any sex, or whatever. He's going to get punished, right? And so my husband and I talked about that, and we thought, you know, this is just silly because we both want to be able to enjoy these occasions, these events. And so let's just set each other up to win. So we decided we'd have this agreement. It would never happen that he would forget our anniversary, because every year I talk about it with him and tell him what I think would be fun or what I might enjoy doing. And then I let him get the opportunity to plan it. Then I'm all happy because he plans it for me, even though I shared with him what I wanted. Mm-hmm. We get to go enjoy this experience together.
And instead of setting a booby trap for him. Instead of setting a booby trap for him.
Exactly. And so we've had fantastic anniversaries every year. I've never once been upset or unhappy, or he's never once even had the chance of forgetting about it, because we just have created this opportunity to have a win-win. Mm-hmm. And I just think that's where we have an opportunity so often.
And that's so great, Michelle, that, you know, you like Molly was saying earlier, women oftentimes are more creative, right? So you get to do the creating of the experience, and then he gets
she
to come up with it.
She actually lets him play.
Well, she gives him his ideas of what he wants, and then he comes with his ideas, right? So it's
he gets to implement, though.
He implements.
He implements, right, like a guy wants to do, right?
Right.
Here's how to solve it. I'm there.
Yeah, I always...
That's a great example of how to set your relationship up for success, right?
Yeah.
That type of thing. And if we could be doing that in all aspects of our relationship, you know, then relationships, they flow easily.
Right. What you did, you know, you took a wider view of the situation instead of getting caught in the back and forth that so many people, okay, we can see millions of couples have this issue. Let's not have it. Let's together figure out how we can do it differently. I really love that.
Yeah. And it doesn't mean you have to give up the holiday. You just put a bigger perspective on it, and right, you find a way that makes it work for both of you. It's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's worked really, really well for us. And I just think there's so many ways that we can set our partner up, women and or men, for our partners to win. So we create a win-win scenario. And this comes full circle back to what you were talking about in the beginning, about having these conversations about what you want in terms of your intimate life, your sex life, being willing to talk about that and not expecting your partner to be a mind reader or to try to figure out what you want or what's important to you, mm-hmm. to actually have those conversations and mm-hmm. set each other up to win. You set mm-hmm. each other up for a win-win experience. You both get to have satisfaction and enjoy the intimate life that you have together. And it's mm-hmm. like, it seems so basic and simple in one way. And yet, like you're saying, millions of people have the anniversary problem. Millions of people have the sexual problem where yeah. they're not satisfied in their sex lives.
And they're not yeah. communicating. Right. And we can't feel bad that, you know, we've probably all experienced that. Right. Most of us have experienced that. We can't feel bad about that because that's what we've been taught. Mm-hmm. And it's time for a revolution in how we do relationships and how we approach sexuality in a partnership.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Most of us have not had good role models in this way. You know, it's kind of interesting because in my family of origin, my dad was kind of the sentimental, thoughtful one. You know, he was the one that always wanted to do really nice, sweet little things or buy sweet little gifts. My mom was not very sentimental at all. And I can remember on many occasions, he would have gone out of his way to get something he thought she would really like. And she would say, I don't like that. Take that back. And so, I mean, I'm just saying, like, I wasn't modeled how to set each other up to win, but I'm so glad that knowing, you know, because of the relationship work that I've done and knowing some of the pitfalls that sometimes can cause problems with couples, we have been able to take some of those big picture looks mm-hmm. at some of these situations and sidestep some of those common traps. And I just really think this is a powerful concept overall in your romantic life, in your sex life, just in your life in general, particularly if you want partnership.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anything else you want to add to this idea about commitment? Because I kind of took us off track for a minute.
Not really. I mean, you know, if we've got ways to deal with the biggest reasons that people don't want commitment, right? And what you've just been talking about is one of them, right? I don't want to get into a relationship where we're nitpicking and we're arguing about these little things. To be able to even address that up front, as well as the sexual issues, right, is going to make somebody more willing. Like, wow, you really, this is making sense to me what you're talking about. You're telling me that if we, you know, try out something long term, you're not going to get upset if I leave my stuff around? Well, that's radical.
Yeah. I like you more already.
Exactly. Exactly. So I want to ask you another question about commitment that's just come to my mind. And that is kind of on the side of women and their, some of their fear about commitment. Because now, as I mentioned, I tend to work with more mature women. So a lot of them have had some life experience, some relationship experience. They may be very successful in their careers. They may really know how to navigate the world on their own. And maybe out of necessity they've had to do that, or maybe by choice. But I have women tell me quite frequently that they're afraid on some level. Like, they want partnership, they want intimacy, but they're afraid of losing their freedom. Mm-hmm. So there's kind of this underlying ambivalence really about commitment in a relationship. And this is from the female side.
Yes.
Like, they're afraid a man's going to dominate them, or, you know, they're going to lose a certain amount of their freedom or autonomy or that sort of thing. So speak to that a little bit, if you will. Yeah, I know I'm throwing the
No. A couple things come up quickly. One is that obviously it's really important who you choose as a partner, right? And you're going to be on the lookout, on the alert for things that sound like that. When you talk to them about their previous relationship, you're going to be listening for, are there signs that this person is controlling and manipulative? You don't want somebody like that. Mm-hmm. So that's what, and there are great books about how to, you know, red flags to look for so that you don't end up with someone who's controlling and manipulative. That's one thing. Another is, boy, do I know a number of older women, including myself in that group of older women, who have decided that the best relationship for them is one where they actually keep their separate domiciles, right? That they don't merge everything, because they love their autonomy for the time being. They love their separate life, and that they will have a relationship where they see them two or three times a week instead of full time. So that works for them to maintain that sense of freedom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and financial considerations can come into play for some of these women too, because some of them have had successful careers or have accumulated a lot of resources. And just like the men don't want to lose everything again from a divorce, some women have that as a consideration for them as well. They don't want to lose that financial security that they've worked so hard for as well.
I think it's a time for creativity.
Yeah. And so again, this probably comes back around to having these conversations about these things again, and just being real about what the desires, what the needs are, what's important.
And what the fears are.
Yeah, and what the pitfalls might be.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, this has been such a great conversation. I've really loved it. I'm so excited that we talked about this, because I think it's going to be so valuable for so many people listening. And I always just love interviewing the two of you, because I just think you're so darn cute. So cute, so together.
Huh? You're so sweet, Michelle.
Thank you. And of course, I told you before, Joe, I'm biased toward the redheads for some crazy reason.
You and me both.
And my husband too. He's a convert.
Once they convert, they never go back.
That's right. So I know you two have this wonderful free gift, and this is an opportunity for people to learn more about you and your work and to stay connected with you. So they can get that by clicking on the link below the audio or video that we're watching or listening from. But tell us a little bit about it, if you will.
And it's very appropriate for what we've been talking about today, because this Amplify Your Sexual Energy course is really about developing within yourself more sexual self-confidence, getting more in touch with your own sexuality, getting more comfortable with your own sexuality. And all of that is so important if you want to be able to propose to somebody that, wow, we have a more I don't want to use the word open because that's already been used for something else, but we have a more connected sexual relationship, right? To be able to do that, you kind of got to feel more comfortable with your own sexuality if you don't already, and that's what this video course is about.
And the more comfortable you feel with your own sexuality, the better sex is going to be in general. Mm-hmm. So we think it's a great course.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for offering that. And everybody just click on the link below to get that. And it'll be available throughout the rest of the event. But get it now so you don't forget. And then also scroll down and check out the VIP package where you have access to all of the interview conversations on an ongoing basis, as well as some really great bonuses. So Molly and Joe, as always, so lovely to connect with you. And I really thank you for your contribution and really appreciate the work that you're doing in the world and how supportive you've been of me over the years. It means a lot to me. You two are really lovely people and I really appreciate you.
It's been fabulous.
Yeah, thanks for having us on, Michelle.
Always a great conversation with you.
Yeah.
We always learn a lot too.
We do.
Well, thank you so much. And ladies, be sure to join us for more of the event. Bye-bye for now.